afternoon, everybody. This is Talking Early Years with me, June O'Sullivan, and today I have a lovely guest. And it is true, I have lovely guests often, but Karen is a really interesting woman and has a really interesting history and as a social entrepreneur, but also has now kind of entered into the portfolio world and has much to say about the role of women, women leaders, and women social entrepreneurs, and what we can learn from her. And I feel that this conversation could go many ways. So I'm just going to hand over to Karen to introduce herself, and we're going to crack on.
Hello, June, and thank you for having me. I'm not quite sure how to take that introduction, and other than to say we can take this whichever way you would like to. You have my promise. I will be open, frank, and I will try not to swear.
So you have to start at the beginning, which is like, tell us about you and, you know, your the history of you becoming a very well-known social entrepreneur.
Okay, I'll do a very quick version of right from the beginning. I thought I wanted to be a school teacher. Did you know that?
No,
so I went
I didn't.
To Sunderland Polytechnic to do a Bachelor of Education. And the attraction was, of course, job can't be that hard and lovely long holidays. But that wasn't a B for me. And I ended up very excited about the idea of getting into publishing. The idea to move for this job was actually because I'd met a fella. Didn't last very long. But anyway, it brought me to the area of Peterborough, where I have answered a job ad that said a career in advertising is at the end of your telephone. I ended up in telesales. I thought I was going to be writing amazing ad campaigns, you know, and, you know, great advert ideas. We did get to do a bit of that, but I got hooked on specialist magazine publishing, where I became the publisher very quickly of magazines ranging from Birdwatching to Garden Answers to Today's Runner to Country Walking, and loved it because everybody on my team, if they were working on Birdwatching, guess what? They were passionate about. So I grew up, you know, even if Model Railway, you know, or Athletics Weekly, I grew up in my working career surrounded by people who were really engaged emotionally and passionate about what they did. And that's really shaped my thinking on careers and career goals and what I do next. So I spent 13 years in media at EMAP, which is now Bauer, running the specialist magazine division, EMAP Active, a big portfolio of mags there at the end. And I'd met my now husband. This is going back 20 years nearly, because we've been married nearly 20 years. And he ran the mags business at Smith's, and there was a conflict of interest. And so when I got a call that said, Karen, we would like you to come and head up the team at Barclays that looks after all of our branches, so our ideas for customers, you know, our advertising, the way the staff behave, our proposition development, I moved into finance in 2003, and I spent the next 6 years having some major highs and lows, thinking I could change the world of banking, but hugely frustrated about how long everything took, about lots of people with heads down waiting for the final salary pension, and I missed all of that passion and purpose that I'd felt at EMAP. And through the talent development program, that's when I realized, you know, I need to do something different. And had the classic chat with my husband, and who was amazing, and said, fine, do whatever you need to do to find purpose, because he couldn't bear me saying anymore, you know, to people who came around for dinner, what's your purpose? You know, how do you know if you're in the right job? And through that journey of thinking I might become a vicar or a midwife or a pig farmer, I discovered the world of social enterprise and came across Blue, who asked me initially as a brand consultant to come in and value the brand, because there was almost £2 million worth of debt, and they needed to do something. And at that point, stopping trading was the plan that was on the table, and it was about how did we minimise the debt. So that's how I accidentally got into social enterprise, or discovered it. And through the business plan that I wrote, going, the brand isn't worth anything, but this is what you should do with Baloo. Because, you know, I later realised I'm addicted to helping solve other people's problems. They're much more interesting than my own. And so that's how I ended up with Blue, and accidentally ended up being the CEO doing the business turnaround.
Just for the listeners here who might not know about Blue, can you just say what it is?
I can. So please do have Google of the amazing Belu water. That's B-E-L-U. Belu is one of the, well, if you're in the social enterprise bubble, it's one of the best known social enterprise brands. Initially, as a bottled water company, it sold mineral water to restaurants, hotels, food stores, promising the best environmental standards and then investing all of those profits into ending water poverty. So all the profits of Belu go to WaterAid. And at the point when I left, we were up to handing over £1 million a year. And the total was, I think, just over the £5 million at that point. So it was a real success story of a business turnaround. And actually, in the latter years, competing with ourselves by trying to get our customers to move into filtered water, which of course removes a lot more of the carbon footprint. So a really nice success story, which actually I still use Belu as a case study when I teach at Oxford.
Yeah, I teach at Oxford. Well, you just threw that in there. That's like, hey, you know, what's this teaching at Oxford lark then?
Well, so this is, you know, when we're on a mission, I think, as social entrepreneurs, we don't just want to tell our story within our bubble. Well, I don't anyway. I have this personal mission of inspiring all business owners, all entrepreneurs to think differently. Instead of focusing on how do we make more money and then maybe feeling guilty about their impact and or their customers demand they give it more attention and they go, right, what do we do? For me, I get really excited about inspiring. So that they're groups usually of 40 to 60 in each cohort that I teach, and they own businesses that might turn over anything from £250,000 to say £10 million, usually family owned, usually not with that much debt, the majority of them actually, sometimes really risk adverse. And they're studying with the hope of graduating after a short program at Oxford with a brand new business plan for their business. So I teach on a module called Your Business One Planet. And I'm using the Belu case study and actually the case studies of other social enterprises to inspire these guys to think about how they can better engage their people, how they can better develop their proposition of their product or service. And through the process of those, reduce environmental impact or increase social impact through the course of doing business. So integrating that within their business model and showing how that can make them more competitive and they can win market share for their competitors. And it's great fun because they walk into the room, huge cynics, they get interested in the case studies, and then you see the light bulb go on.
This is entirely true. And for social entrepreneurs, the three pillars of sustainability, which is, you know, something I'm kind of a bit like slightly obsessed by these days. It's very interesting when people begin to realize that they exist and what that kind of can mean for them. Now, I guess, and I might be wrong about this, but the last statistics about women leaders in social enterprises, that we were disproportionately higher. Well, it didn't take much, to be honest, but disproportionately higher than women in mainstream businesses as leaders. Is this true?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And for me, I think there are probably a couple of reasons for that. Now, dangerous to generalize, so I won't. But often we have interruptions in our work life through kids, family changes, menopause, which might make us question what we want to do and make change. And therefore, we start thinking about if I'm going to do something else, having learned everything I've learned and discovered what I'm good at, discovered what I'm passionate about, what could I do? So I think we're more open to change. I think in the traditional household, sometimes it's less risky for the, you know, the one partner as a woman, I think there must be stats on this, to take that risk and change first because there's already been some interruption. And, you know, we're very good at multitasking, I think, women doing breadth and depth often. Not all women, but I think that it's no coincidence that we don't just have a sector where we outperform women leaders in volume. But I think also in our ability to run smaller businesses, certainly the cohorts that I've been teaching at Oxford, we try really hard to get the balance and get, you know, an equal number of women in the room. It's difficult, even in owner-managed businesses, you know, beyond social enterprises. But once they are there, you know, the ability to multitask, to manage breadth and to depth, and to be able to focus on the sustainable commercial business model and that impact. It's quite complex, right? It's quite complex. And I think we emotionally commit to making it work no matter how difficult it is, you know, because we've got had a track record of juggling many things, home, house, kids. Again, not all of us, but obviously the statistics of, you know, history and relationships and households, of course, influence the statistics of where we end up with our careers.
No, it's a really interesting point, the bit about emotionally committed. I do wonder sometimes, and it's almost to a point of almost suicide, the willingness we will go to keep the show on the road. I often describe running a social enterprise to colleagues as building a bridge while you're still on the bridge. And it does feel like that sometimes, doesn't it? And the emotional connection. You raised a number of things that I think are barriers to women's sometimes success, sometimes stickability, and they're wrapped around care. And one of the things that distresses me a lot is that care is so undervalued in society. And, you know, there's no thank you for either doing it or supporting families to be able to support each other in a sort of circular way, but also for those of us like Leaf, you know, where we actually operate within that kind of care sector. But you also, so in that you raise an issue that's been a really powerful discussion across Leaf very recently, and we've introduced policies and all sorts of things now, and that's the magic of the menopause.
Magic is an oversell, let me tell you.
Oh, isn't it just? Isn't it just? But, you know, I just, when you think about it, there's no getting away from it. So no woman is going to escape this. Some might get through it a little bit easier, and some women have a really hard time. Some have perimenopause. They're in the menopause in their mid-30s, sometimes as early as that. But it's a bit like the bear hunt. You know, you can't go over it. You can't go under it. You've got to go through it. As I say, sometimes smugly to younger staff who look a little shocked when I even say the word. And I say to them, it's coming your way. It's only a question of time, girls. It's on its way. What do you think, I mean, as role models, how do we get past that? Because, you know, when you're in an investor meeting, or you're in some, you know, fancy pants meeting with loads of, serious people, just to even raise something like menopause would immediately strike you off. Like, you could feel them writing in the notebooks, no opportunity for them, no funding for them, no finance for her. But actually, it's a real problem is too strong a word perhaps, but it's a real challenge, and it can go on for years, and it actually could really impact on older women staying in jobs and using all their vision, wisdom and experience to actually walk away instead of sort of sticking with it. So I'm kind of interested in your thoughts on that, particularly now you started to build your portfolio.
Yes.
So business.
So I think that, and there are positives of everything, right? You can tell I'm internal optimist. So we must talk about in the context of that as well. So so I think, one, we've got to talk about our experiences more, which we definitely have, but I think it's a big job to do, and I guess to make that point, you know, we have to help ourselves. I was through the heavy childcare bit, right? So I was 46. I now know, when I look back, I was 40. Well, if you want to be technical, I was 46 when I had my last period. That was 7 years ago. And I am still going through hot flushes and waiting for a specialist menopause appointment because I can't have HRT via my GP, which is a long story. So I was through the childcare bit. You know, the kids were going off to university. I should be at the point where I'm an empty nester. I'm getting really geared up of, this is going to be a great time to really focus on my career without the distractions. No more guilt of being the, you know, no, I can't pick you up from, you know, the kids were driving, you know, no more struggles with balance. And what I just was completely blindsided, to the point I didn't realize it was happening. And so the first, you know, the first big memory where I kind of go, crikey, this is really impacting my performance. What is it? And still not knowing what was the menopause, was International Day of the Girl, room full of people, spotlights on, I'm the speaker, chairing a panel, and I'm just feeling the sweat dripping down, going, there is something wrong with me. And I had to go outside and go, there's something wrong with me. You know, and I'm a 46-year-old woman at this point, 47, I think maybe. And how could I be so bloody naive?
Yeah.
You know, and in part, it's because my mum was one of the lucky ones. She flew through it. I didn't notice it. We certainly never talked about it. And therefore, probably, I think I was in denial. And, you know, when I got, it got worse and worse till the point where I was, you know, 50 and said to my husband, I've got to get out of work within the next 12 months because I am struggling to cope. It's not working. That was the kind of point of deterioration. And just for context, I did leave Blue 2 years ago. And when it really tipped me over the edge in terms of coping mechanisms, it was because my mum became, her health deteriorated, and she became very ill. The whole of the story about hip replacement going wrong, and she eventually died last September. And so knowing and feeling the personal pressure of you know, I didn't have childcare, but I had parent care, who lost her mobility, and my dad's 83 and they lived in Spain, I had to create the freedom to be able to be more flexible. It wasn't that I couldn't work, but I needed more flexibility. But I used that as cover, as my reason, actually, as my reason to not just adjust to leave, because I had three board members, and this is all my fault, right? So I'm the leader, I'm the CEO of Blue. I had two board members who were male, that were non-execs, that I never really lent on enough to help me. And I didn't, you know, I dropped enough hints. And I definitely tried to talk about it, but it wasn't easy. And I just decided not to have that battle. You know, I didn't want to show that weakness of needing help or support. I'm the leader. And my other board member, Charlotte, who's amazing, had three kids still in primary school. The last thing she wants to do, coping with a lot, the last thing I want to do is depress her and need more support. She was always adamant she didn't want to be CEO, and she now thankfully has gone on to be co-CEO. So there's two younger ladies running Blue. And I look back now and think, how could I have been so naive? Why was nobody talking about it? Why didn't nobody seeing me struggle say, have you thought this may be menopause? I kept having the tests going, inconclusive, you know. Eventually I got a test saying yep, and I'm going, but now what, can I have HRT? And I couldn't, because I'd had surgery for breast cancer now 5 years ago, and my appointment with the specialist menopause clinic is next April, so I'm still waiting. Wow. So I've done what I can in terms of self-help meanwhile, but I guess the message and the story here is I used cover story of the additional pressure to both, I guess, be in denial myself of the fact that I was the one who needed help and couldn't get through. And it was better for me to just go, I'm out of here because I need to focus on my mum. Could have asked for a career break, could have asked Charlotte to stand in for me. You know, it's and it's really difficult because there are lots of reasons now why I'm really pleased I moved on. But it was the toughest part of my life. The exit was by no means good. Coronavirus was, you know, lockdown literally kicked in my last week. It was quite horrendous, actually. It's probably the low of my career, that actual process. There was no celebration of my time there. There was no, you know, handing over the last bit, the £5 million. It was emotionally tough. And actually, if I'm honest, it felt really disrespectful at times. And so much of this is my making, because I could have handled it differently. And I guess the message in that is, we cannot always, as the leaders, lead as well as we could do. I needed somebody else to come in and be the leader on that situation. And it didn't happen by magic or osmosis.
Yeah. It's very thought-provoking, Karen, what you've just said, because it's a bit about a combination of stubbornness, the imposter syndrome, Like, how could you possibly be in this role this long? There must be something not right. Huge doubts that you constantly have for every decision you make, and a kind of lack of self-belief. So it's a really interesting combination, isn't it? Mm. And then underneath all of that, being unable or unwilling to actually say, I wonder if it is something that's going on in my life, like the menopause. Which is reassuring when you know, because when you read up about it, you don't end up losing your memory and the ability to speak coherently and the words for things like washing machine. And in the middle of a big speech, this most obvious word like because can't come to your mind fast enough. That all passes, thank God.
Yeah. The bit for me is names. You know, having gone from being someone who, you know, very sociable, lots of networking, know lots of people, you know, the frustration and the worry that, oh my God, maybe, you know, maybe I'm getting Alzheimer's, you know, I mean, you know, that for me. And I would say, actually, so on a positive, let's throw to the positive, you know, so, you know, our bodies change, it's nature, we all have to go through, as you said. I now have the most amazing portfolio career with challenges and pressures, but very, very different that I may never have experienced. Mm. I got to spend those last months with my mom. And what else?
Well, to some degree, you're teaching now.
You know, I feel a bit better in myself. I'm starting to surprise myself when I remember some names or some things. And also, I think within probably only the last year with some of my new teams, that fresh start was enable me to say, you know, my standing line is, you know, I can't remember something, you know, could somebody prompt me? You know, it's not me, it's the menopause, you know, actually giving the accountability to something that isn't just me, that it's life.
It's a bit like in the early years when we say you don't describe, you know, the child as being something or other negative in some ways. You describe the behavior so that actually they don't carry it thinking that they're noisy or bad or whatever word is describing it, but actually the behavior is that. And it's a kind of the same thing, isn't it? It's kind of like being able to describe the issue that is causing the sort of symptoms or behaviors, but actually you're in control of that thing rather than it taking control of you. It's a very interesting one, and I just think it's a conversation that those of us who've been leaders for a long time and who are women have kind of shirked from that conversation. And it kind of goes back to the point you made at the beginning, that social enterprises are no good if no one knows about them. And if we don't shift the kind of mainstream approach to thinking differently about businesses and its purpose and what good business can do for good people. And on that note, you've just created another business, haven't you?
I have. But before I talk about that, Jude, I was just thinking there for a minute. At least if I talk about this bit separately, you know, the editor can edit this out. But the bit that I need to say this out loud in what's going to be a public forum is I've got a group of very, you know, lovely ladies who are my friends. Some a bit older, some a bit younger. And even though we might bravely now use the word menopause now and again, if anybody says dry vagina, it's absolutely shut down, right? So the bit we don't just need to do, we need to, it's not just say the words menopause, we need to actually make, you know, it's not an embarrassment to have to deal with those things if we know they're coming and we've talked about the realities of life. Whilst we keep those things locked in the cupboard, it is always going to be difficult. So it's much more than just raising awareness of it. We have to talk about the symptoms and the challenges. So sorry about that. But, you know, if your editor wants to take out dry vagina, feel free.
The editor is me, and I won't be taking that out particularly because, you know, if anyone knows me at all, they know that I'm very frank and open about realities. And so what? You know, it's just a function of our bodies, isn't it? Like the hot flushes. I mean, oh my gosh. But anyway, so let's just
think about...
Hey,
there would be no such thing as cardigans if it wasn't for hot flushes. You know, again, let's focus on the positive. So
Yeah, my sister used to mock me endlessly about cardigans, and she used to say, "Oh, June, you and your cardigan." And I say, "It's all about the layering. It's all about the layering. Take it on, put it off. Take it off, put it back on again. You know, over your shoulder, around your waist, back on again. You know, this is like sleeping at night. Duvet on.
And actually, you make a good point. And I've often thought, actually, what we should do, a couple of us, is we should invest and we should go and do some training with Funny Women, which is a great organisation. And we should write some comedy sketches about menopause, because we just need to get it into that space. And yeah, maybe let's talk about that one, June. We can do a double act at some point.
Oh, yeah, I like a bit of comedy. I'm often accused of it. That's in the board meeting.
Yeah. I wonder how it would go down if we presented as an idea for the Social Enterprise UK Awards for another day. Anyway, you asked me about the Speaker Bureau. Let me tell you about that. So Expert Impact is an organisation I've been involved with for a little while, I think about 6-7 years. And what we do is we match founders, some great global names, people like, I don't know, Tim Schmidt or John Frieda, or some smaller names like Karen Lynch, was CEO of Baloo. But we match founders who've been there, seen there, done it with social entrepreneurs. And the idea is we take them through a process of coaching, then they're face to face with this expert and amazing things happen. Amazing doors can be opened. They might get the most incredible high profile board member. They might solve a problem together. They might get a listing. They might find a route to investment. We call them spark sessions. And it's a great idea. And then we've got this alumni of hundreds of social entrepreneurs who've been through the process. And then we do peer-to-peer mentoring and learning. But actually, it's in that classic charitable trap, and that it had a single source of grant funding that was running out. And so I was one of the experts, and I'd coached also the then leader, Kendra, lovely lady, who was moving on to a new role. And so I offered to do a strategic review. And of course, it was very simple, is we either need to be very proud of what we've done, and when we run out of cash, that's it. Or we need to become walk the talk, become a social enterprise and generate revenues so we can continue to have this amazing impact. And let's leave the grant funding for those charities that really need it, right? It's hard for them to do that, or they're just too far away from that. And so the idea was that we launch Expert Impact Speakers. Basically, really simple. There's a whole industry of events, of corporate conferences, entertainment that books speakers, entertainers, facilitators, chairs for panels, for recordings. And actually, why, if we can have a social enterprise in almost every product category or service category, why shouldn't we have a not-for-profit, a social enterprise speaker bureau? And so the model is this. We could get you anybody on the market, because that's the way the market works, but we also have our own stable of amazing speakers who just can be booked through us. And of course, everybody who's booked and speaks through Expert Impact Speakers is on a social or an environmental mission. You know, they're already impacting a social enterprise, because our commission on their fee comes to us, and some of them will donate part or all of their fee, and we invest that into those social entrepreneurs. So it's a really neat idea. We've just gone through stage one, which is recruit all of our speakers. Have a look at Expert Impact Speakers. We've got all sorts on there from June, June O'Sullivan, amazing social entrepreneur, to David Coulthard, to Lenny Henry, Vanita, who works with us. She's come from a comedy background. She knows lots of comedians. And so to all of your podcast listeners, just spread the word. If anybody needs to book somebody for an amazing inspirational story, so a social entrepreneur perhaps, or a headline speaker, and you just want to create impact through that, then get in touch with Expert Impact Speakers. Thanks for that room to give a plug, June.
That's great. It's I'm very delighted to be part of it, because I'm fed up of doing stuff for free.
Well, and that's a really good point, right? So, and again, us nice people, we think, well, we're asked to do it. We don't have the price negotiation. we don't even want to ask about fees. We just go, oh, I can fit it in. Go on then. You know, and we go along and we think it's part of marketing and helping. And actually, what that's the other reason we've done this. We're creating valuable income sources here for social entrepreneurs who should ask for a fee. I remember my own experience once. I went along to a panel and realized halfway through the night, everybody here was getting paid for this except me.
Yeah.
And at that point, I always used to take the inquiries and give them to one of my team to then negotiate the fee. And with more confidence, the fees went on and on and up and up.
Grace, my assistant, sells me regularly, and because the money is reinvested into I'm trying to build an appreciation fund for the staff so that actually we have some nice treats for them, and she charges me out at all sorts of rates apparently. I have no idea, but anyway, I'm just, you know, packed off to do stuff. But you know, it's no hardship talking about something you're very passionate about, but it feels altogether better when the money is being recycled into the business. And the benefits are, if you are in a portfolio career, that actually is recycled into you so that you actually can survive.
Well, so I'm actually staff at Expert Impact. So I'm the expert. So I just do it, and my fees will go into Expert Impact. So, I mean, we're on a mission to go from being 100% grant dependent to not relying on grants within less than 18 months. It's quite a tough gig to
that's
go
a
that
tough
way.
Gig. Yeah,
but that's
yeah.
what we're trying to do. So anything your listeners can do to help support us, please do.
For absolute certainty. Right, well, we've come to the end of our time, though it feels like it's just flown by.
It has.
You've got your plug for impact expert speaker. Is there anything else you want to leave us with? Is there any like three tips for women, especially older women who are feeling lacking in confidence about themselves, even though they've probably got a whole history of success behind them that they can't see? What would your top three tips be for them that doesn't involve having a glass of Aperol?
Do you know, I was just going to say gin and tonic. So firstly, I would say be supportive to each other. Find your support network, because we're all going or have gone or going through it. And actually be ready for the emotion of, you know, a bit like when I lost my mom, I just thought, you know what, I could have been more supportive to a friend I know who lost her mom. It's, you know, it's hard, right? In these busy lives, just remember we've got other priorities other than work. I would say when you're at the point of feeling that you're failing at everything, just stop and tell yourself, you know, that's not true. You know, guilt is a self-imposed emotion. So do that. And then ultimately, I think, you know, remember, we're not in control of everything. In fact, I was in a session today, coaching session today of, you know, I do lots of things of drawing circles. But for me, it's drawing a circle of, you know, what decisions can I make, or what choices do I have? You know, and then the next circle being, you know, what's my area of influence? You know, what potentially could I do, but I need to get other people on board? And then just what's out of my control? And I guess, you know, right now, it depends when people listen to this, but right now there are some horrendous things going on, you know, in the world. And, you know, the number one thing I would, I guess, like to leave us all with is to be thankful for what we do have, and to be thankful for every day that we're given to try to live and to try and make a positive impact with every one of those.
On that happy and positive note, I'm going to thank you. So let's thank you to Karen Lynch for her insight, her humour and her down-to-earth approach to various things. That's it from Talking Early Years on this podcast. And I hope you join us again in the next month when we'll be up with some other weird and wacky subject for discussion. Thank you again, Karen. It's been a pleasure.
Now we can have that gin and tonic, June.
You can.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining me today. If you like what you heard, please share it or check us out on our website, leaf.org.uk.